Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's a Sunday afternoon. I expect to have a busy week, and therefore I'm going to get the first one out of the way. Since I delayed doing Mishpachas Stefanski till the end of the week, last time I'm going to put him at the beginning of the week and devote today's podcast to speculating, thinking out loud about some themes of Vayikra and Purim, and in honor of Mishpachas Stefanski, thanking them, as always, and I'll tell you what I mean. If you ask me the question, get right into it, in other words. We have Parshas Vayikra, and then you have Purim. So what's the connection between Vayikra and Purim? If you think about it, at least if I thought about it, you say like this. A major sub-theme of the Megillah is rebuilding the Second Temple and the prevention thereof. There's not a word of that mentioned in the Megillah, but on the other hand, it does say in the Book of Ezra, this guy Achashverosh, who we know so little of, he doesn't appear in real history. He only appears in the Book of Esther and in the Book of Ezra. And when he's mentioned very briefly in the Book of Ezra, he's mentioned in connection with the fact that he prevented the rebuilding of the Second Temple. I think the pasuk goes something like this: "Betchilas Malchus Achashverosh." Hold on for a second. Okay, here I found it. It's in Ezra 4:6, where it says that Cyrus let the Jews go and rebuild the temple. Remember, that's the beginning of Ezra and so forth. And then he changed his mind. The reason he changed his mind, because he was approached by lobbyists on behalf of the Arabs. And they said, don't let the Jews do this. And very similar to the Balfour Declaration events, by the way. And he stopped it. Okay, and that's because a letter was sent to him, although it's not clear, because it says, Koresh Artachshasta, Dar Yavashal, Gemara says they're all the same, meaning that they're used sometimes interchangeably, even though they're different people. And here's the point. The pasuk says, he's referring to the Arabs now, Vahi Amaretz, Merapim Yedei Am Yehuda, Much interesting that the Arabs, the locals, whoever was in Israel at this time, the Samaritans, this one, that, and the other, they weakened the hands of the Bnei Yehuda as they tried to prevent them from rebuilding the Second Temple. And they terrorized them. Mevahalim, they mamish terrorized them. It's the same thing like nowadays. And they hired lawyers to lobby against the building of the Second Temple at the Persian court. Kol Yemei Koresh Melech Paras. This lobbying effort commenced during the time of Cyrus, meaning after he changed his mind and said the Jews can't build. Whoever's there is there, but nobody else can come and join them. Ve'ad Malchus Daryabash Melech Paras. Until the reign of King Darius, however you understand it. Let's, for our argument's sake, for the sake of this podcast, let's go with the Seder Olam and say it's the son of Esther. Okay? So, 18 years is how long this stop was. And here's the pasuk. B'malchus Achashverosh b'tchilas malchuso. Again, B'malchus Achashverosh. So, they mentioned him. B'tchilas malchuso, beginning. Kosu sitna Yoshi Yehuda Yishalayim. They wrote sitna, hatred, on Yoshi Yehuda Yishalayim. It doesn't tell you what they wrote. Very interesting. It goes on to say, however, that that Bimei Artachshasta, not Achashverosh, right? Bimei Artachshasta, whoever that is. I mean, I know the different theories, Artaxerxes, this, that, and the other. Kosa B'shlom Mitra Tovel Shnach Al Shtasa Parparach. They wrote a whole long letter. Ruchum Bel Ta'em, B'shem Shai Sifra, Kasu Igra Chara Yishalayim. The two guys led the anti-Jewish lobbying effort, the letter that was written out, as we say today, the anti-Israel types. One was Rechum, and the other was Shimshai, the Sofer. According to Chazal, Shimshai would be the son of Haman. So that would mean, it's hard to get the exact chronology on this, because it sounds like there was Achashverosh, and then came Artaxerxes. But it's really going backwards. So Artaxerxes might be Cyrus. I forget how the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah works it out. But the bottom line is that they wrote a letter, obviously to Cyrus originally, saying if you let the Jews rebuild the Second Temple, they'll declare independence and cause rebellion in Persian Empire and you lose money and so forth and so on. And he bought it. He believed that. Therefore, he put the effort down. In the middle of those 18 years comes the 14-year reign of King Achashverosh. Now, again, I'm going by the Chazal system chronologically. So imagine you got Koresh. Again, I'm going with straight Chazal system. So you got, let's say, Koresh, and then Achashverosh, and then the next guy, Daryavish. That's how they would sort of envision it, leaving all the problems aside. So if it's 18 years, 14 of those 18 years would be our guy, Achashverosh. And we're told in the Gemara, at least according to one theory, that he kind of usurped the throne. In other words, he wasn't from the royal family. He, Mamoni Yisera, he bought his way to the power, which is why sometimes, you know, there's innumerable efforts to try to figure out and correlate with history, with the Greek history and the others, who Achashverosh and Esther and Haman and all these other guys are. And there was a king, Darius, the son of Hystaspes, who, you know, became the king after Cambyses died through a certain trick. And so there was a guy who was not from the royal family who became the king. But I don't know, I'm not conflating one with the other necessarily. All I'm saying is that Achashverosh came on board, according to that way of thinking, as a new guy. And the anti-Israel types got to him at the very beginning. Right? They got to him right away. Now, the Gemara portrays Achashverosh as somebody who went whole hog on this. And they say that he took out the Kalim Beis Hamikdash because he figured the 70 years were up. You know the story like I know it. And he wore the big day kahuna and all that kind of stuff. What's striking to me, you know, because I was going through the Agadah now, you know, I always do Megill in a funny way, so now I'm doing the Agadah part. And I never really paid much attention. As you will process, those of you familiar with the Gemara Megill, which I'm sure many listening to this podcast are, will remember you have the following story at the very beginning of the Megillah, before Mordecai and Esther even exist, you know, before they show up. And that's the deposition of Vashti. The king throws a big party. Vashti refuses to come. The king blows up. Hamasa Barbo. And he calls his seven advisors. Right? And the advisors have funny names. Well, of course they would. They're Persians or they're Babylonians or something. But remember how Karovi loved Karshan al Shesar, Admosa Sashish, Maris Marsan al Mumuchan. Not Jewish names. So the Pashup Shad is he had seven advisors. And the Gemara even says one of them was Haman, and so forth and so on. However, the Chazal have a certain mahalach, among others, that when they find funny words, they like to dash it in a certain way. And therefore, perhaps you will recall that it's, the Gemara says, Rabbele, Rablevi, and Yud Beis on Beis, call Pasuk Zal Shul Karbanus Nevan. That when it says the king called the seven advisors, it really has to do with the Karbanos. What does that mean? Amr Malchus Sharsam Nei Kadosh Baruch Hu, the angels in heaven, say, Rabbanu Shel Olam, Klum Hikriv Lefanecha Karban Eishana Kedesh Shehikriv Lefanecha. That when it says Karshana, the angels in heaven say to God, why are you going against the Jews? Have these Goyim, like Achashverosh and these other guys, have they been Makri Lefanecha, 1-year-old lambs, the way Klal Yisrael did in the Karbanos? Or Shesar, it's not a guy's name, but Krum Hikriv Lefanecha Shtei Torin,
Admasa. Klum Baruch Vanecha Mizbech Adoma. They haven't done that. Admasa. Klum Baruch Vanecha Mizbech Adoma. Tarshish. Klum Shimshul Vanecha Big Dekuna. Right? The way the Klal Yisrael did. Although, that's a little bit funny because Achashverosh is supposed to put on the Big Dekuna, but more as a joke than anything else. Maris. Klum Maris Abadamal Vanecha. Did they mix the blood, you know, after the Shechita? Maris and Maris and Menachas Vanecha. Memuchan. Klum Hechinu Shulchan Vanecha. Did they prepare the Shulchan? I guess they lechem upon him or whatever it means. Point is that they give an agadic interpretation, which is fine, but then if you want to follow it through, if it has to make sense, it'll be nonsensical, not nonsensical, then what's going on? How do you understand this? The king got angry at Vashti, and all of a sudden, and he calls his advisors, and it turns out he's not calling his advisors according to Rav Levi's interpretation. Instead, the Malachim are presenting kindness on behalf of Klal Yisrael, which have to do with the Karbonis. That's the connection with Parshat Vayikra, right? Have to do with the Karbonis. And they go into detail. Karshan HaShesar, Admasha Sarshish, the Degarmen HaDuah. So in other words, it's a non sequitur. And I guess, strikes me, the only way to make any sense out of this particular Agadah is to go with the idea that when it says HaMelech, it means the king upstairs, not the king downstairs. It's possible to read the Megillah that way, as you know very well. And, you know, sometimes it's easier, sometimes it's not. And so in other words, let's put it this way. If I understand it correctly, two things happen, A and B. One is the king downstairs summoned seven Geisha advisors with these names, and they had a council of state to decide the fate of the queen. Yes, that did happen. However, at the same time, the Melech upstairs has a consultation with the Malachim. This is a well-known trope in Chazal, like in Nasan, the God talks to angels. Now, don't give me my Manadim business, because this is not from that Mahalach. Excuse me, but it's a well-known, you know, stratagem in Chazal. It's a well-known stratagem in Chazal. And therefore, in other words, describing God as a king who has advisors, namely the angels, and he says, shall we make man? Shall we make the world? What should I do over here? You find this all the time. In yeshivish circles, they call it Pamalia Shamayla. Actually, it's Familia Shamayla. You know, it's Familia Shamayla. The bottom line is that the image, the Agadic image of God consulting the angels, as I understand it, is a way of saying intelligent design. That God doesn't do things, you know, out of anger or off the cuff or something like that. That kind of emotional losing of a temper is associated with lesser beings. When God acts, it's well considered. And the way they express the idea well considered is, you know, he spoke with the angels, they discussed it. You understand? Went through a process, as we say today. So while downstairs, Achashverosh is talking about what should be done to Vashti for being rebellious, upstairs, God is basically saying like this, should we kill Vashti or should we not kill Vashti? Now, this is obviously based on the tradition that Vashti was the one blocking the rebuilding of Beis HaMikdash. In other words, as I just showed you from Ezra, there were different factions at the court. Just like today in America, there are different factions in the government. Pro-Israel, anti-Israel, as they gate us. So at that time also, you know, pro-Israel or anti-Israel, pro-Beis HaMikdash, anti-Beis HaMikdash. We know Rechum and Shimshai were bad guys. It's mentioned in the book of Ezra. If Shimshai is the son of Haman, no surprise over there that Haman would be one of the people against building Beis HaMikdash, of course. Haman Agagi, he had a son who was the king's secretary or something like that. It says Shimshai Safra, so he was a cipher. Doesn't mean he was writing Sefer Torahs. He was, an official in the government, as we'd say today. And I'm sure the Jews were lobbying on their side to get the attention of this new king named Achashverosh, and the anti-Jews were lobbying on their side. But the anti-Jews have a trump in that, a trump card, in that the queen, who the king likes, named Vashti, she's with the anti-Israel crowd. So, you know, there's even a famous Chazal or two that say, the king says, I'll rebuild the base of Mason. She says, the thing that my father destroyed, you want to rebuild? Meaning, she like threw it in his face and says, here you are, you married me. Why'd you marry me? To show continuity and legitimacy. Why would Achashverosh, who had 10 million women, why is he one Vashti, who's supposed to be, according to Chazal, daughter of Belshazzar, the last king of Babylon, to give a certain legitimacy that even though he fought and killed his way into power, but his children, in their veins, will run the blood of the former legitimate kings like Belshazzar and the others. It's a very common practice in many parts of the world. And this particular Vashti, she was real Chalaria, and she's saying, if you undo the stop order, you will then be undoing the work of my father Nebuchadnezzar, who destroyed the Beis Hamikdash, or my grandfather, whatever his relationship was. And that will show a lack of continuity. It'll hurt your stability as a king, right? As it was, he had a certain amount of instability. That's clear from the story and from the Gemaras. And, you know, she's playing on that, which is interesting. At least that's how I understand it. Now, in Shemayim, they're having a discussion. What should we do with her? And the angels are saying, whatever the discussion is downstairs, the angels are saying, she's against the base of Mish, klu mersu lefanecha dam, klu hechinu lefanecha shochan, meaning, you, God, want a base of Mish. And the second one, a base of Mish. And they already started a little bit, and it's been a stop order. As long as Vashti's around, you know, she's going to prevent it. So let's knock off Vashti. She already made a fatal mistake by somehow or other either refusing to come to the party, or as the Gemara said, she threw in his face. You know, she basically said, you're poor white trash, which she was. You know, my father could hold his liquor, you can't hold his liquor. That's no way of saying like this. You're, you know, a hillbilly, right? A low life, just clawed your way to power. You got no class. And the Gemara says, Adlikaba Kolhai, since it was true, he really blew up at her. He was on fire to do something about her. And so when they're having discussion downstairs, Rabbi Levi is saying, they're also having the discussion upstairs. And since her whole plan was to prevent the Beis HaMikdash, so the angels could say, hey, there's not going to be Karsha, Tarshish, Shesar, Admasa, Sarshish, Maris, Maris, Menuchan. You won't have all the Beis HaMikdash kind of stuff. I can see that. But that way, you know, you're saying that the Megillah is read on two levels. What's going on downstairs and what's going on upstairs. Perhaps that's the key of how you read the whole thing. In other words, every time it says a Melech downstairs, something similar is going on upstairs. I'm just thinking out loud. I'm thinking out loud. It says that, you know, Mordechai, what shall I say, was near the Chatzar Beis HaMelech, right? So it means there was a guy named Mordechai, there was a dude named Mordechai downstairs who was in the Shushan HaBira, in the royal compound. At the same time, he was the Chatzar HaMelech, HaMelech. And Mordechai was a high madrega, and, you know, ruchnius-wise, Kabbalistically-wise, he was a Chatzar Beis HaMelech, get it, upstairs. Like a Novi or something like that. So he was a Chatzar Beis HaMelech. You get it? You see a certain key. Now, sometimes it's easier to do than others. The Ramah played with this in his book, Mechir Yain, I remember, but he went off in funny philosophical directions. It didn't really work for me, personally. But if you do what I just said, which is, you go, I mean, I think a fair amount of time you'll be able to see that. You understand? So, you know, Malasosi Karla Miha Melechafetz Bikaro. What are you going to do, as Haman says, or as the king says, to the one that the Melech wants to honor? So, yes, there was a story downstairs with a guy named Haman, and the king wanted to honor the person who had revealed the plot of Bigson Seresh.
And so he put him on a horse and all that kind of stuff. That did happen. But at the same time, upstairs, what are you going to do, you know, for the person that the melech upstairs wants to honor? And there it's more than just a horse and a wagon riding in the with the royal apparel. Although, when they start singing like this, he wants to wear the hat of the king and the garments of the king and the horse of the king. If you understand HaMelech, he wants Ruchnius. What does it mean to wear the royal apparel? What does it mean to wear the royal, you know, hat? What does it mean be led by one of the Partimim, one of the high princes? It's a certain way of saying, as I understand it, that Mordechai is going to have like a walk through the Pardes, you know what I mean? Like the mystical Pardes. And it'll be guided by, he'll be guided by one of the Partimim, by one of the high officials, meaning one of the big Malachim. However you understand that. And the idea of being guided by a Malach means they're not like the four people who went through the Pardes. And three of them messed up because they misinterpreted or they banged their heads against marble and all these other stories. If you have a guide taking you through, you're riding the Susa of the Melech. You understand? That means you're going on a special journey characterized by someone who knows actually where they're going. So you don't have to worry about stumbling in the Pardes, going in the wrong direction. And so, basically, immediately before the miracle of Purim, Mordechai has a sublime religious experience. And there is a Midrashic tradition. It's not in the Gemara, but it's in the Medrash Rabbah and other Midrashim. That he has a dream about the sea serpents and foreshadowing the victory of the Jews over the anti-Semites over there. I mean, it's all part of the idea that Mordechai, when he goes in at the very end, when they fast for 3 days and all the rest of it, he's already had some kind of a hint from upstairs or some kind of a vision that it's going to be successful. The only thing is, doesn't tell necessarily people because he wants to scare them and make them daven. That seems to be a tactic of the Jews, of Mordechai anyway, which is don't tell people you have a big brother looking out for you. Let them get scared and let them do tshuva. You know what I'm saying? It's like if I have a fight with you and you're coming at me. This actually happened to me when I was a little kid in another neighborhood when things were rougher. Some kid was coming over to beat me up. I won't go into all the racial stuff. And he didn't know my brother at that time. I'm going back many, many years. Many, many years. Was creeping up behind him. You know what I mean? And socked him. But, you know, the guy didn't know it. So similarly, the Jewish people don't know that they're about to have a big Yeshua. And maybe that way you scared them into doing Kima V'Kiblu. There's a lot of ways of treating that. But you have this interesting connection of the upstairs and downstairs. You know, and again, it's laid out in great detail. I think if I remember correctly, in the Targum Sheni and in Medrash Rabbah, as I recall from memory. And we know this from the Gemara because the Gemara says as one of the interpretations of why did Esther invite Haman to the party, one of them is that they won't say, Achus Yeshalon Beveis HaMelech. They won't say, we don't have to work hard because we have a sister, meaning Queen Esther, on our side in the palace. If they see Esther apparently kissing up to Haman, they'll say she's going over to the other side, you know, like Schumer or something like that. And you know, we have to daven on our own. Right? I mean, that's just a general thing in the history of Klal Yisrael. When you have a lobbyist there, you always say, I don't need to daven so hard. The lobbyist is doing the work for me. Otherwise, you have to daven. Right now, the way the war is going on in Gaza, I mean, we all have to daven. I don't think there's anybody, I can't think of a big Jewish lobbyist in the Biden administration, other than Biden himself, interestingly. But I don't think he's surrounded by those type of nice people. That's interesting, by the way, because he doesn't have, as far as I'm aware, any, you know, particular Jewish friend who's acting as a Mordechai in this type of situation, which we need badly. And so you see this double level over here. I'm suggesting this to you. So you have a week before Purim now. You look through the Megillah. I don't know if it'll work easily each time, but you'd be surprised a fair number of times this upstairs-downstairs business, this Melech and HaMelech,
does kind of work. We know the Gemara says Nada Dashnas Amelach, but there's a lot more than those types of places, and it's interesting when it happens. But in the beginning, and underneath the whole story, is this idea of preventing the Jews from building a Beis HaMikdash. And as it said, Bechilas Malchus Achashverosh Kosu Sitna, there was some kind of hatred. And so the king comes onto the throne not liking the Jews. But he's not liking the Jews because of Kosnu Sitna. Doesn't say Be'etzim he didn't like the Jews. He was persuaded. He was successfully lobbied by the anti-Jewish guys. That's how I see it. The whole point of saying Kosnu Sitna, Yehuda Yerushalayim, and they did get to him. And maybe it was the same kind of arguments that worked for Cyrus, which was if you let the Jews alone, they'll build up an independent kingdom. Because we don't see that the king, before the Haman episode, is out to get the Jews. Not if you go by the rabbinic traditions. For example, when it says the king threw a big party, it's Lasos Kirtson Ish V'ish. One of them is Mordechai. No, Mordechai was a big macher at the court. Maybe the king said the Jews are okay if they're in exile, but they're dangerous if they're not in exile, and they shouldn't have their own country. Vesach Nish. But I only mention that because it presents an image of an Achashverosh who is doable, is persuadable. Why is he against the Beis HaMikdash? Because Betchilas Malchus HaKotzu Sitna al Yehuda Yerushalayim. So if you act right, if you maneuver successfully, you can reverse that. And that, of course, is what Queen Esther did. Well, no, she didn't. No, she didn't. She was able to save Jewish people. She couldn't get him to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Isn't that interesting? Now, we'll never know because he dies a year after the Purim story. Maybe if time would have gone on, she would have been able to work her charm with him and get him to change his mind, but he never does. Chazal say, Ad Chatzia Malchus V'Seyos, meaning, but not the Beis HaMikdash. So he was hooked on this particular idea. Although it comes out crazy, because like this, my prime minister is Mordechai. My policy is very pro-Jewish. I said the Jews can all kill all the guy they want. Esther becomes the number one queen. The Rabbi Miamir's Messiadin Kinafal Pachad Mordechai Alehem. Cholsari Hamadinos Minasim Misayudim. So Achashverosh really presides over a pretty pro-Jewish business, but not the Beis HaMikdash. Isn't that funny? So this is why, in my opinion, they say at the very beginning, when he's coming to decide the fate of Vashti, that in Shemayim, they're debating, is this the right time or not for the Beis HaMikdash? And the angels, quote-unquote, are saying, whatever that means, that, if you leave it up to Achashverosh and these guys, there will be nobody to offer any karbonos. Apparently, the karbonos are important enough to make the whole, trigger the whole story. Now, it's more complicated than I'm saying, but like I said before, I'm throwing this out because I never really gave that much thought to this business, this agadah, of saying that the Malachim are talking to the king about the fate of Vashti. Maybe I'll continue this later this week. But anyway, I went long enough, a little overtime. So let me start this week a pre-Purim with this vart. And again, one of my goals is to make you think about Melech HaMelech and see if it works, the upstairs, downstairs business. And as always, I want to thank Mishpachas Stefanski for sponsoring.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidovidkatz.com.